You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 2021, kickoff of the Crash Course Podcast. Podcasts, I say plural, because we've got a lot of them on deck. I'm joined by Cody McBride. Cody, how are you?
Great. How are you doing today, Neil?
I'm doing excellent. For those that don't know, Cody is the newest member of No Laying Up, and he's actually helping us out a lot with the Crash Course, making sure we keep publishing them. I think we kind of fell off the wagon a little bit, but we've got a lot of them dialed up. We've been stockpiling them the last 2-3 months, and it's going to be a wide range of courses, the strap courses, the C-suite courses, and all the stuff in between. So Cody, what gets you excited about the crash course stuff?
I think it's everything that it encompassed. It doesn't matter if it could be the most private club in America, which we're going to lead the series off with, or it could be any of the courses that, you or Big have visited on your travels for strap. So I love that it's a complete mixture. For me, being a Midwest guy, I'm excited to throw a little Midwest flair in there as well and throw a little bit of the heartland that nobody ever really gets to see or talk about.
Definitely. And I hopefully it goes hand in hand. We're launching a new course map on our website very soon. We're recording this in April, but hopefully by the end of April, all these crash courses, all the tourist sauce, every place we've visited in golf and have a piece of content about will be indexable, if that's a word, on this course map at nolayingup.com to kind of make it a one-stop shop for golf course research. I think, what can the listeners expect? What's the cadence? What's the volume we're going for monthly with these crash courses, Cody?
Monthly. I mean, we're kicking this thing off and we're coming in hot with it. So we're going to be at a clip of 2 podcasts a week, all the way through about the end of the year. So obviously, holidays and some other bigger events might throw us off that schedule, but we're going to go 2 a week, Tuesdays and Friday morning, publishing for pods. And then we also have Crash Course Video that we're going to get about 3 or 4 videos out a month as well. All of this is made possible by, a new presenting sponsor that we're bringing onto the Crash Course, and that's Cooper Tires. Very excited about it. Happy to have them on board. And this wouldn't be possible without their support. So outside of that, Neil, any other parting shots, words of advice for me before we get this thing rolling?
Well, I'd just say with Cooper, it's kind of like the Michelin stars for restaurant. Maybe this is the Cooper, the Cooper rings for golf course reviews. And what people can expect, these are 20, 30 minute, maybe longer podcasts. And we're trying to identify, where is this course? What's the history? What do you like about it? What was your favorite hole and kind of what you shot and parting thoughts. So kind of as the name describes, a quick crash course in each spot. With that, let's go launch them, bud.
As I mentioned earlier, the Crash Course Podcast and Crash Course Video Series is presented by Cooper Tires. They have a great option they want you to know about. It is the Cooper Discoverer Enduramax. The Enduramax tire has enhanced durability thanks to technology from Cooper's off-road truck tires. This means drivers can tackle any road condition with a smooth, quiet ride. The Enduramax is packed with cut-and-chip resistant tread technology. That helps you combat poor road conditions that try to chew up your tires. Its improved internal construction helps provide an even footprint and thus improves tread wear. Light truck belts have been integrated into the design, helping to improve strength and overall driver handling. If you drive an SUV, you need this tire. All Cooper tires are backed by a limited warranty, a 45-day test drive warranty, and select products are backed by a treadwear mileage warranty, helping to give you confidence on the road. For complete product and warranty details, please visit www.coopertires.com or www.coopertires.ca.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, Crash Course enthusiasts, welcome back to another episode. I'm joined by TC. TC, how are you?
Hey, Neil. I'm good, man.
What are we talking about today?
National Golf Links of America.
Sheesh.
NGLA. The C-suite.
The C-suite. Would you call it the home of C-suite golf in America? And if not, what would be?
I don't know. It's tough because it's... Maybe your experience was different than mine, but I found it to be almost elevated above the C-suite.
Masters of the Universe.
Yeah.
It was a thrill for me to rub elbows with the Masters out there.
But it's such a, you know, I've never played Muirfield over in Scotland, but I imagine it's similar to that, where it's almost that shabby chic, that gentlemanly, you know, like aggressively understated stuff where you go in the clubhouse, like you go in and the locker room's in the basement and they've got exposed rafters and, you know, the halfway house is probably my favorite in all of golf.
Aggressively understated is a good way to put it in some ways. I mean, the clubhouse is still has that, you know, robber baron vibe to it. I mean, the gates driving in are a little.
Yeah, I mean, it's still like a little out aggressive, on Long Island, right? And yeah, it's very, you know where you are.
You certainly do.
But they don't have to lay it on you.
For sure. So let's start there. Where is this course?
It is on the Peconic Bay, out on Long Island, right next to Shinnecock, and kind of sandwiched between Shinnecock and Sabonic, there and. Yeah, probably can't find a more opposite place than Sabonic to National.
Yeah, spending time in New York during college, and then afterwards, I've been out to the Hamptons, you know, a few times, not to play golf. And I was always blown away by and kind of confused on, this is kind of pre-NLU days or early NLU days, on like how, like, so there's all this good golf out here. Like, where is it? And it's, and going to National and, playing at Southampton a couple years ago, it's crazy how it's sandwiched in and like pinched into this, like where Long Island gets really skinny with the Atlantic Ocean and the Peconic Bay. And then like all these clubs, it's like a neighborhood, like they're all right next to each other. And when you're not familiar or you don't have access to these places, you're like, where could these courses be? And it kind of blows you away that like, wait, so they're all just like right next to each other and they're all just like super private. But then you can drive down that, you know, I think it's Tuckahoe Road, and you're driving like it's a public road, like that goes right down,
right past, through the course,
right through Shinnecock, next to the clubhouse, and then like right through. I think it's 10 and 11, or I think it cuts 11 and a half on National. You know, you hit your drive and the ball, so you're just like, wow, like here are these extremely exclusive places, but there's no real fence up around them. It's almost just an understood. It feels like with the, you know, the Eastern Long Island neighborhoods of like, yeah, you just, you know, you guys just keep your distance, right? Like
know your place
a little bit, which is a little jarring, you know, because most of the time in other parts of the country, like there's definitely, you know, private keep out signs and very obvious, like for instance Peachtree in Atlanta, right? We went to high school right down the street from Peachtree. I have no clue what that place looks like. It's kind of, you know, the secret garden. There's a big green fence around it, you know, but it's you know, maybe 500 yards from the entrance, probably like half a mile from the entrance to our high school, you know, and sandwiched between like Peachtree Industrial Road and, you know, it, but there's no, you're not seeing in there. Whereas National felt like, yo, you can look, but you can't touch a little bit. Like if you want to go drive around and explore, you can just, you know, don't park here basically.
That's how Cypress is too. Yeah. It's funny. You pull up National.
Cypress even has a little bit more like tree cover, you know, like yeah, you're on 17 mile drive, but it there's a bit of a like you got to peer over the fence at it. You know what I'm saying?
It's funny because on Wikipedia, one of the first things it says is this private club has been called America's snootiest golf course due to its exclusive nature.
Which is, and I think we can get there, but let's start with the history. So I have a little history from the NGLA website, you know, what little there is on that website. The National was founded in 1908 under the leadership of Charles B. McDonald. The golf course was constructed with the assistance of Southampton engineer Seth Rayner. After studying many of the courses in Scotland and England, Mr. McDonald set out to build a first-class course in the United States, which would incorporate many of the better qualities of golf courses in the British Isles. So that is from the website. Anything you'd like to add to that history? Any facts that you picked up on your visit to National? The National.
No, I mean, I think they've got a great book, actually, a great club history book. But it's very, I feel like it's a living history. When you go there, it feels like a museum. It feels like you're playing golf in a museum.
The word that jumps to mind for me, too. I would go a step farther and say bunker museum. The bunkers truly feel like sculptures.
Every type of bunker you could ever imagine.
Which I got a real kick out of. Little snake bunkers, church pews.
Micro bunkers.
There's like on 17, there's like an inverse bunker where it's like grass in the middle and then like sand on the walls. Yeah. It's like, what are we? It's like, what else can we dream up with these bunkers? So I did really, really like that. And then also I looked up because I get a kick out of infrastructure, the history of the windmill. And so this is from the USGA website. So the windmill is kind of the iconic symbol for the National. From the website, a water tower was initially set on the high point of the property. So the windmill sits, I think it's above, it's above 2T and then like next to 17T. So like high point of the property, you go way out and then you come back in. So I think a water tower was initially there, and it said, and the National was one of the first courses in the U.S. to have its own watering system. So it seems like, you know, it was one of the first places where there wasn't really any dues. It was kind of just like, hey, I'm going to do this, and then, you know, we'll send you a bill at the end of the year. And it turns out an early member, Daniel Pomeroy, an early member of the club, and at the time the president of Condé Nast, suggested to McDonald that a windmill would be a nice touch. In response, McDonald, who not only designed and built the course but also owned the property on which the club sat, ordered the windmill and had it assembled to enclose the water tower. Whether Pomeroy initially paid for the construction or McDonald simply passed along the bill to him, there's historical evidence to support both versions of the story. He is credited with gifting it to the club. Which I thought was sweet. It's like, yeah, oh, you want a windmill? Cool, I'll buy one, assemble it, and then I'll just send you the bill. Like, I hope that's the...
Don Quixote.
I hope that's the story that's true. But,
I think you could do a whole podcast series of 20 episodes on the history of the club, probably. I mean, there's, you know, all sorts of influential members and you know, kind of the founding members and all the, you know, amateur golf they've had over the years and just kind of seems to be kind of the home of you know, American golf, at least on the private side.
Yeah, and I'd say back to the museum analogy, it's definitely more of a private collection, a Frick Museum or a Guggenheim.
It's actually funny you bring up Frick. He was one of the founding members.
Was it? Yeah. So it versus the Met, right? It's not like there's no, you know, there's no student passes or anything that you're getting like you do in the Met. It's like, no, this is it feels like a wonderful collection of private art, but you need to be invited to view it. So it's very, very much a private place. And I have a story. So from when I showed up, I got the invite and I was thrilled. I was a little nervous, you know. I was like, okay. So I called Tron the night before and he was with Zach Blair. And I was like, great. You know, both you guys, I think you played together out there.
Yeah, we played in a fucking monsoon out there.
Yeah, so night before I'm like getting ready and I've heard all this, you know, oh God, the lobster lunch and this, you know, you got to wear a suit and tie. And this is, you know, summer of last year, 2020. And so I called, I was like, all right, what's the story, guys? Like, what do I need to bring a suit? Do I need to bring just a jacket? Can I wear khakis? Like, should I, you know, is there locker access?
What's the protocol here?
What's the deal? I literally said, I'm trying not to look like a tourist. Like, I want to just feel like I'm comfortable and I have everything I need. of course, Zach was like, I don't really know. I don't really remember. Like, I guess
Zach's
bring
probably
it.
Been there 35
Yeah,
minutes.
Like, I guess bring it, you know, and you were like, yeah, just, you know, bring your suit. So, of course, I overpack.
Just
I got
bring
like
a sport coat.
Yeah. Well, I thought, do I need a tie, you know, and do I need a button-down shirt? And so I'm like, okay, so I pack all this stuff. I show up, and of course, you drive through these gates, and there's no signs anywhere, right? And so I'm running, not late, but cutting it a little close. So I pull up, and the parking lot's not very close to the clubhouse. You got to walk up this hill. So then I'm kind of like, all right, well, I got to put all this stuff down, and I walk around the side, and there's a door with waters and masks out in front. I'm like, oh, cool, there's a locker room. Perfect. So I go in there, and I set my stuff down, and I don't see an attendant, but I'm like, now I'm running late, so I'm like, okay, well, I'll just put it under this bench here, you know, kind of just out of the way so no one can see it. I look at the lockers. I'm like, oh, man, this is cool. You see, you know, CB McDonald's got a locker, Michael Bloomberg. Like, this is really something. Man, heavyweights. So I walk out, walk around the side to the back of the clubhouse, and I'm like, oh, this must be the pro shop. Walk in there. I'm greeted by a locker room attendant, and he's not super friendly. You know, like, but, you know, Who are you with? You know, clearly I'm a guest. Oh, you know, I give him my member's name, and I say, he's like, well, you're going to be late. Where's your stuff? And I'm like, oh, I put it in the locker room, like on the other side, just like around the corner. You put it where? I'm like, I just, you know, I'm running late. That's the founder's locker room. You're not allowed in there. What are you doing? I was like, oh, cool. I'll go get it. He goes, no. You've done enough. Just go. I'll get it. I was like, okay. So within 5 minutes, I basically, everything I spent like 30 to 45 minutes the night before trying to avoid,
you've undone all that.
I almost doubled down on it. I wanted to say to the attendant, like, dude, if you knew, like, I tried so hard to prevent this. This is exactly what I was trying to prevent. If you guys just would have put a sign up that said Founders Locker Room, keep out, I would have kept out. But I guess that's the vibe. It's like, if you know kind of thing. So anyway, I get over the first tee. Didn't hit any balls, you know, and came out and you know, it went well, which was good, but I was a little frazzled, you know. I was already like, God, man, I'm a total, you know, pretender. I'm a tourist. So anyway, that kind of sums up a little bit of the vibe for me. And then later on, I've heard all about the South Side, you know, gotta get the South Side at lunch, have to get the South Side at lunch. Well, you know, I get to the halfway house out there at 10, and I'm like, I am jonesing for a South Side. And, you know, halfway house guy is like, we don't do those here. I'm like,
the guy in the halfway house is the man.
Yeah, but he was like, he just looked at me like, yeah, you're a clown. We don't do those here. I was like, okay, what? And he was like, you know, and my host was like, well, that's a lunch thing.
The birdcage.
Dude, that's just a lunch thing. I'm like, God damn it. And then the best part. Is I did all this stuff in the locker room happened, and I didn't tell anybody. And then we're playing 36 holes, which was great. And so we finished the first round, and I go, hey, yeah, let's, you know, like, do you want, we changing for lunch? You know, I'm ready, baby. And he's like, oh, no, man, we're not doing that. It's COVID. We're eating outside. And I was like, oh, my God, I didn't need to bring any of this stuff. So I guess I could have just asked my host beforehand. But again, I didn't want to look like a pretender. So I asked you and Zach, and not that it's your fault, but you know, all of that locker room stuff was for absolutely no reason. So it was just like a total, it was epic really. And it was just kind of one of those Seinfeld moments.
Always just ask your host.
I know. But you know how it is. You kind of want to like, when you don't know, ask. I know. But I was trying to go to the, you know, another source. So anyway, sorry to get us off on a tangent, but, What was your experience with the vibe, TC?
It's very played Shinnecock that morning and went over there in the afternoon. Like, we were the only guys on the course. It was like Vietnam rain. I mean, it was like raining up from the ground. It was so rainy, but wanted to play, so we played. And yeah, I don't know. I mean, I enjoyed it. I can't wait to get back. It's yeah, it's a living museum, and you know, I felt like the tie that binded, at least with, you know, maybe not the membership, but just the people that are there, it's more of a, there's a certain sense of appreciation that runs through the place for golf, you know, and yeah, of course, you know, it's very exclusive and very, you know, kind of high society, but at the end of the day, it's about the you know, history of golf and the history of golf architecture and everything. So there's that kind of tie that binds there. And then, yeah, I mean, as far as the, it's funny you said the pro shop in the clubhouse, like, no, that's not going to happen either. You know, up at an old school.
I know. Northeast. I know. Well, listen, I'm not, I haven't been over to a ton of these places, right? Like I was on a heater last summer. Mm-hmm. And all that to say, like, the vibe stuff, I felt very welcome. So, like, I just say that.
But that's my thing. I think everybody was, like, very conversational. And yeah, like, it's not a place that you're meant to feel welcome.
Yeah, exactly. It's almost like they kind of want you to be, like, you know, you don't belong. And that's fine. And I think everybody who, you know, as you play more and more exclusive courses, or I guess as I do, you kind of learn the ropes, right? Like, as far as... like you said, just ask your host, right?
It's just such a blue blood, old school place that it's tough to kind of dive into the deep end there. But I've been to a lot of other places where I felt a lot more unwelcome. Like, I felt very welcome at National. It's just, you know, because it's about the appreciation of golf. But yeah, I think, you know, talking about environment or atmosphere, I think the halfway house is awesome. It's like my favorite halfway house in the game. They had beef broth, you know, beef consomme in there. In an urn.
Well, it almost felt like the...
It's like a trail hut on the Appalachian Trail.
Yeah, it's like you're way out on the back corner of the property, and you almost feel like, okay, you know, dad's not around. Like, you know, like, okay, you know, like, we're out. Because like, once I was out on the course, like, it was very, very laid back, you know. The caddies were... great. You know, they were good. One, my guy was like kind of apathetic, which I was digging. You know, he was just kind of like, it was great. Like it was a laid back vibe more so than like a, you got to grind and, you know, it didn't feel like a player's club, if that makes sense. It felt like more of a appreciation of golf. How would I put that? Like the history shines through more so than like, yo, this place is really going to test you.
Yeah. I mean, it's shit. It's what, 60. You know, championship is under 7,000 yards. You're probably playing it from 6,500.
I played the the one up tees and then the back tees, and I think those back tees were not at the championship level. But let's get to the golf. What sticks out?
Super kind of handshake opening with Valley and Sahara 1 and 2, but so short that they're kind of awkward. Like you got to figure out. You know, you can go at it. You can lay back. You can hit whatever you want off those first two holes. They're like, you know, 300, like 315, and then under 300 for the second hole. And then you get to the third hole is the Alps, which is
so for the listeners, three blind approaches in a row. So the one, if you hit it up there close to the green, elevated green, you can't really see.
It's like going back.
So you're hitting an 80-yard shot, but it's still blind.
It's the kind of course where, like, you know, it's tough to play your first time when you're a guest and you're like, where am I hitting here? Where
Sahara, you have no idea. It's like, yeah, I think just, you know, cut it off this line. So that's kind of a reachable par four blind approach. And then the Alps hole is, you know, you hit it up to this hill and that's just like a traditional blind approach, which it's kind of funny. It's like, yeah, someone built a modern course with three blind approaches in a row. I don't know if people would really like that. So, and I could see how like one of my favorite holes was the Sahara one, simply because it was like number three at Old Mac is one of my favorite holes at Bandon, and it was great to see like the inspiration for that. I was like, oh my god, this is like the original
the original's at Prestwick.
Well, the original in the U.S., but kind of like seeing the lineage because I haven't been to Prestwick, but I got a thrill out of hitting that shot.
Yeah,
the first time around, the second time around, I could see the more you play there, the more you'd be like, man, this is. This is frustrating, right? To hit this, like, but it's also like, well, then just hit, you know, lay up and hit it in the fairway, and then hit the approach. You don't have to hit the go for the green there.
Yeah, oh, and I think they like the Alps, and then the Redan is number four,
which I thought was sweet.
Great Redan. Yeah. Again, the Redan's like the original Redan at North Berwick is probably like one of my lesser favorite Redans I've played. And then, five, you got kind of a...
it's the Hogsback.
Yeah, Hogsback.
Right? I thought that was an interesting hole.
Cool hole.
The course isn't long, but I found myself off balance a lot. like yeah, tee shots, a lot of change ups, right? It's like, okay, you get into either
short side yourself,
weird bunkers or weird lies, but there's not really any lost balls out there.
Yeah, which should be very hard.
Which is a lovely setup for me. So I really like that. And then the, I think there's a par three.
The short,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's just like, you know, I'm probably not the best person to ask about the specific, just because I've only played it once. You played it, like, your second time around, did you play it a lot better? Did you play it a lot differently?
My scores, I shot 74, 75. I played great. I finished my first round with five birdies in a row. So I birdied 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, and then I birdied number one to start the day.
Sheesh.
So that was a thrill. Even the caddy, who I mentioned was pretty laid back on 18, he was hyped when the putt, I made like a 12 to 15 footer, like a double turkey. We probably won't see that maybe ever again. So yeah, that was a cool place to go on a heater. But I was solid, pretty much solid all day. I got into a couple, you know, like I hit it in the bunker on the Redan, you know, the front left bunker, which is like, that's jail. But, you know, you learn like, okay, my second round, I didn't make the same mistake twice. I made other mistakes, but I was able to be like, okay, you kind of learn your lesson. Like, I'm not going to put it there this time around. But there's also some holes where you kind of let your foot off the gas because they almost look like they're a little easier.
Yeah.
Like even like the road hole, it's like, oh, there's not a bunch of trouble out here. And then, you know, the false fronts get you, right? Or like the double plateau hole, number 11, you think, oh, this is just a straightforward, like kind of long par four. That whole, like, I've never been a big double plateau guy.
Oh, it's like
it was
my favorite
so
template.
Cool to see a green, like all three sections of the green were big enough for like multiple pin locations. And then that back bunker, like pop bunker behind the green. And then I got into some trouble with the false fronts around the sides, right? That hole doesn't look scary. And then all of a sudden you're walking off with, you know, you're trying to make a 10 footer for bogey, which I thought was a thrill.
Going back, I think the windmill's like up by two green, right?
Two green?
Yeah.
I think, yeah. It's on two.
It's on two. It's up by the green, I think.
And then 17T is right next to it, or like right below it.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. What's your favorite hole out there?
Good question. I think, I don't know. There's a couple on the back nine that I really like. You know, I love the Alps. I love the Redan. There's a couple on the back nine that I really, really dug coming in though. Like, the Cape hole's really, really cool. And then the Narrows hole. I was blown away by that hole.
The Narrows is which one?
16. Sorry, 7. Or sorry, 15.
15. Yeah, and then punch the pole's punch pole 16. Yeah. Yeah. I think like 14 through 18, 18 with like the infinity green, the uphill hole is
a
little.
Yeah, 18 was such a unexpected hole where, you know, like I had no idea. Like I'd always seen all the pictures of National and everything. I had no idea it was going to be that much, you know, that 18th hole uphill against the coastline there.
Yeah.
To, you know, this elevated green. I actually went in the back bunker, or one of the two back bunkers, and it was like death back there.
Yeah, it's kind of a climb back up the hill. I like 17 a lot. That kind of get the
super cool driving hole,
a good view of the property. It's just kind of a Mad Max drive down the hill, and then that bunker I was talking about. A bunker complex, I guess, where it was like there's grass on the top and then it's like waste bunkers on the like on the sides of the mound.
Like the number of there's insane amount of bunkers on that hole. Like there's and they're all different. Like there's the little tiny ones up by the green and you got some weird, crazy stuff going on there. I just felt like that closing stretch kind of between like from really the Eden, you know, like that, those par fours in a row, 14, 15, 16, 17.
It's awesome.
Super cool variety. And like you said, it keeps you off balance the whole way in. And then, yeah, as far as like the, you know, going back through, I think the, you know, the way that like some of this stuff's presented to you as you go out towards, you know, like 7, 8, 9, 10, kind of out towards that south end of the property there. There's some cool stuff there. Like the long was, I'll ask you, what was your favorite hole?
The Cape is up there. I'm a sucker for infrastructure. So kind of the lock system there where the tide comes in and out. That was a great hole. I thought the road hole was like one of the cleaner looking holes out there. It's out there in front of you. It's very flat. It looks similar to 11. It almost looks like it's not going to be that hard. And then you get up by the green and all these the short grass, runoff, false front stuff really gets gets tough. And then 11, I think the double plateau, that was kind of an eye-opener for me on like what the double plateau template, you know, is. You know, I thought that was like, wow, this is, both times I played that hole, I just kind of chuckled. I was like, this doesn't look hard and I'm just, you know, I'm making a mess here. So I would say those are my, the road hole and the, in 11 and then the Cape would be my top choices.
Well, if you like double plateaus and capes, wait till you play Fishers. That's like the best.
The white whale, the Moby
Dick.
Best
one out there, man. Out there. For both of those, I think, in my opinion. Yeah, I think going back, like, by the time we got to the Eden, was that 14? The like, water was, like, pooling.
13.
13?
Yeah.
Water was, like, pooling on the greens. So
that's a good-looking hole, too. And it was fun to see with the Walker Cup there a few years back, some of the tees they put in for that, you know, for like kind of the I guess the modern game a little bit. And you can just picture coming down a stretch in a tournament like that, like in a match. It's some really, really fun. Those would be fun shots to watch. You know, golfers much better than myself hit when they're trying to win something that matters.
Yeah, going back, the drive on double plateau is sick. And then I think the one before that, what's that? The Shinnecock is the name of that one.
And I think that's the one, I can't remember if 10 or 11 is where the road cuts through, where you know, some like, and there's no stop sign or anything. Like cars, there's like a almost like built up grass, so you can see the top of a car. But, you know, it's like if you're going to feel like don't skull one, you know, the car's going by at 35, 40 miles an hour.
There's a couple roads. There's this White's Lane that cuts through. You actually hit over that on the Eden hole, and then road cuts through Shrubland Road, cuts through looks like number 11.
Yeah, so the double plateau. Yeah. So you kind of hit your drive up in front of the road and then you hit your approach over it. That was a thrill.
Yeah, I mean, going back, there's just like I'm like overwhelmed just looking at the aerial, because there's just so many different kinds of bunkers.
Yeah,
it's insane.
It truly is. Like
it's like Dr. Seuss.
When I say like a snake bunker, I mean the sand is 6 inches wide, right? And the bunker kind of like kind of crisscrosses over 10 feet, 12 feet. You're like, what? What is like? How do you get out of this one? There's like little tiny pop bunkers. There's bigger ones. There's like pop bunkers that have become snake bunkers. It's like, man, this is truly like abstract art. It's crazy.
Dr. Seuss shit.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So, all right. Parting thoughts. What's one thing you'll remember?
I think I was so overwhelmed by everything that was going on architecturally that I don't think I could even wrap my head around it. So it all kind of blends together in my head a little bit, where I have distinct memories of certain holes, but as far as like the flow of the round, it almost felt like I was trying to soak up so much on each individual hole and pay attention to them that I didn't, you know, it was raining so hard that I didn't get the full flow of the round or the full, you know, kind of macro view of the round.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's the kind of place you could probably go there 100 times, you know, you could play there 100 days in a row and learn and not just notice one new thing every day. You would notice 5 new things on every single one of the holes.
Yeah. I would say, you know, I haven't been the most appreciative of golf course architecture in the past. I think going to national really helped my appreciation of that. Like, I know they're not the source of the templates, but they seem to be some of the best ones in the U.S.
It's like a good repository for them.
Yeah, and you just and also, like, you feel the history of, like, okay, this course was built, you know, 100 years ago plus, and I don't know. It's like when you go to a museum and you see the real thing. And like, there's some gravitas to it instead of seeing, you know, what's a good replica or what's a good or a smaller art collection, I guess you could say, right? Like, it's just like the Mondo private art collection of golf in the U.S., you know, where there's some other ones, some other nice clubs.
Well, I think it's not necessarily the best stuff, or it's not necessarily like the greatest piece of, I mean, it's a great piece of land, but it's like, it's not necessarily the best, but it's like, it's the most interesting, the most unique, the most, it's got a certain, you know, authenticity about it, that, which is funny because it's all, you know, it's a lot of template holes from elsewhere. So, but it's so unique in that regard, to where it's, you know, and it's kind of ever changing. Like, I don't think they've ever had a, you know, it's kind of like architecture by greens committee.
Yeah.
Thing where everybody just, it's like a,
there's no like restoration by a specific guy.
Yeah. It's all, is, you know, it's kind of, it's just like a, it's very, you know, group oriented, and, you know, it's kind of an amalgamation of a lot of different styles.
Yeah, I think I feel lucky to have played it. Hopefully this is a bit of a window into the course if you know, you can't get access to it. If you do have an invite, I would say take it. What do you think, Tron?
I would recommend the same. I would also say that, you know, don't go in the Founders locker room.
Don't go in the Founders locker room. You know, and check with your host if you need to bring a coat and tie. I think those are our takeaways, definitely, for me. But it was a fun place to, I'll say this, it was a really fun place to play good golf. You know, I was like, hell yeah. And it's not a hard course, but you're just like, you know what? I'm answering the questions that Mr. Charles Blair is asking me. And I feel like I'm doing a pretty good job of it.
I think it's pretty interesting too, that like, probably the ultimate flex for Bloomberg is, you know, you see his house up on the thing, and it was C.B. McDonald's house.
And I think he owns the one in Chicago.
And he owns
too.
The one at Chicago Golf Club too, which is very, very interesting. Like, that's a,
well, it was really nice of the locker room attendant to give me, you know, the locker right next to Mr. Bloomberg. Even though he gave it to me, I was honored. I was touched by that.
So good stuff. Yeah, I hope to be back. Hope to continue to learn, you know, as much as I can about the place.
It's nice to get a taste of the C-suite life. See how the boys have been living. But you know, we'll have some more crash courses on some strap courses coming pretty soon too. So TC, as always, it's a pleasure. Cheers.